and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show. I'm Andrew Slaven. The international break is over. Stunning goals, controversial decisions, the Premiership was back with a bang this weekend. Hearts and Holt are the 100%ers. It was flawless from Lawless, marvellous from Mallon, but a mare for Miller. And Ferdinand joins Gerrard in Scotland. In the Championship, we'll be getting the gossip from Greenock, where Morton have just appointed Jonathan Johansson. We've got our own JJ in the podcast. JJ Bull from The Telegraph is alongside me. And you had an international break yourself, didn't you, pal?
Yes, I went on holiday to a foreign country.
Oh, my God!
I know, I was doing scouting for football.
Where did you go, though?
Croatia. I did the same trip that everyone seems to be doing, because I am cool. And I avoided all the partying.
Where did you go in Croatia? Sorry, Croatia.
I don't think anyone needs to know this, but I went to Split and then Hvar and then Dubrovnik, which is very expensive. It looks nice, but it's very expensive.
Our other guest in the studio this week from Coppa 90, it's Laura Brannan. Laura, you describe yourself on Twitter as a proud and tortured member of the Tartan Army. There was pride and there was torture for Scotland during the international break, though, wasn't there?
It was a bit of everything, wasn't there? All mixed in. This is when I come to the front here. It's all about international football for me. So when everyone else gets their team playing week in, week out, I'm sitting back waiting patiently for the 5 token games I get in the course of a calendar year. And of course, I took the week off, went back home and got to the games at Hampden.
How was it? How were the games?
Well, we can kind of bypass the Belgium game, can't we? And not talk about all those goals.
But what about
the Scotland players did anyway?
I'm interested because I wasn't there, but I'm interested in the atmosphere.
Damn it. Well, I mean, it's Hampden for a start, so we know it's never going to be good. And you're playing one of the biggest teams in the world, and you're also losing 2, 3, 4 goals. And when the floodgates open, that's it. You just know no one's there for a good time that night. Albania, though, I need to give it credit. People completely slated the fact that there was only a crowd of 17,500 there. But the atmosphere, it was actually quite good. Stephen Scotland got going in the second half. We got the goals. We knew it was going to happen for us. Around the section I was in, which is the kind of side to the of the North Stand, and it's kind of where the diehards kind of go, everyone was in high spirits, and it felt a bit like everyone was just desperate to get back to those times again, where competitive football, we're back on course. Let's just enjoy the night. And it was absolutely pelting down as well. So to just kind of make the most of it, you spent that money, you're at a crap stadium, but we're getting 3 points, so let's make the most of it.
Well, are you happy then that the decision has been made to stay at Hampden?
I'm a very kind of staunch follower. I loudly support the case to stay at Hampden. That's something I've never been a kind of keeping a secret from anyone. So the news of keeping it there, that's huge, I think, in terms of sentimental value, but also just the case of Scottish football having a home, and the home being for football and not sharing it with rugby.
JJ, do you agree?
No.
Come on then.
I think it's nice to have these games. So you've described it as like a crap stadium, right? I agree. It's not that good. They need to change up. I thought we were talking before we started recording this that they should change up, you know, have the stands closer, because that track around it is not conducive to an entertaining time. But when you have these smaller games, I think they should move the Scotland games around the country, because football isn't only in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. I know to many people who are from Glasgow listening to this, this might be the first time you've ever heard this this idea. But there are other places within the country that people identify with as being their part of Scotland. And I think holding it at places like Easter Road or Pittodrie or, I don't know, any place, you know, McDermott Park, anywhere, makes it a bit different, because you get those more localised voices rather than forcing everyone to go to Glasgow every time.
So this wee boy that's grown up dreaming of playing for his national team, does he dream of running out at Pittodrie one week and then Easter Road the next? He dreams of playing on the Hampden pitch.
You dream of playing for Scotland, doesn't matter where, really.
But there's a special element to having your own home dressing room and walking out of your home tunnel.
I think the key here is for Scotland to have the best atmosphere and the best possible chance of striking fear into the opposition, so that the fans are that 12th man.
In goes Ikpeazu, Caution's in trouble, and Stephen Naismith will score.
But it's fine! It's fine!
We might have been a bit sniffy about their chances before a ball was kicked this season, but Hearts fans, you can give me 5. And that's 5 wins out of 5, 5 points clear at the top of the Scottish Premiership. And do you know what? There's 5 Premiership goals this season for Stephen Naismith. His strike away at Motherwell, enough to secure yet another victory. Could it happen? Can Hearts really challenge for the title? We're joined now by Anthony Brown from the Edinburgh Evening News. What's the mood like, Anthony, in Edinburgh right now? And are there more Hearts shirts on display than there used to be?
I think that's where we are at the moment. I was at my boys' football on Saturday morning and I noticed the way Hearts sticks out compared to maybe in previous seasons. There's certainly a buzz about the sort of Hearts support at the moment, given the sort of the way the last two seasons have gone. I don't think anybody could have predicted this scenario, especially when you consider they finished 6th. It was only 4 months ago that season finished under a bit of a cloud. They didn't win many games towards the end of last season. I had the feel of big changes are required here. And to be honest, even though big changes were required, I think a lot of people were sort of sceptical about the number of new players being brought in. Maybe not many of them beyond Stephen Naismith and Dimitri Mitchell were well known in Edinburgh. A bit of scepticism about how quickly they could gel. But certainly defied any doubts over the past 2-3 months with the way they've gone about their business. They look the real deal. It's a pretty special season for Hearts.
What do you think the key to that then is? Is it just a bit of luck, or have you noticed anything that stands out for you?
I think Craig Levein's the big factor, isn't he? I mean, obviously he was the manager last year, but he didn't have a pre-season. Ian Castro took the team for pre-season. It's well documented that Craig Levein didn't think the team were as fit as they could have been last season. He wanted to do things slightly differently. He sort of muddled through in difficult circumstances with a squad that, although he was director of football, it wasn't necessarily his type of players last year. They obviously had their issues with Tynecastle taking forever to be redeveloped, and then they just never really got any momentum last year. They never really had the settled side. They had a lot of injuries, and obviously Craig's just looked out and thought, I need to really go for it this summer to try and get us back on track here. He's recruited really well, definitely has echoes of sort of 2005 when Hearts basically built a whole new team from scratch under George Burley and Vladimir Romanov and got off to a similar start. The fundamental thing is Craig Levein knows what he's doing. He knows how to put a squad together that's equipped to do well in the Premiership. But I think he'll have been surprised with how well things have gone so far.
Well, that's it, because, I mean, traditionally Levein's been quite defensive, and last season Hearts were very defensive in the way they set up for most games. Can you see a difference in the style of play he's brought to them this season? They seem to be more attacking. There's far more pace and a bit more creativity from what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think fundamentally it's just down to the fact he's got more energetic players in the squad that are able to run, that are able to attack, that he's got the sort of player, the sort of options he's been crying out for. Last year he didn't have those options. He was putting square pegs in round holes, trying to muddle through, as I say, as best as he can, just to try and keep Hearts semi-competitive in the league and make them hard to beat again after having gone through that period under Ian Castro where everybody was beating them. So I think he was just being a pragmatist last year, trying to steady the ship, if you like, and this year he's had the chance to bring in his own type of players. So I think it's a bit of a miss that Levein's a defensive coach. A lot of that's come from the 4-6-0 stuff with Scotland. When you watch him at Hearts, he's always attacked in home games in particular. Yes, he has that wee bit about him where he's maybe slightly overcautious in away matches, but fundamentally he's a guy that just wants his teams to play aggressively, to press, to be winning all your 50-50s, the basics of Scottish football, if you like, and he's got players that can do that now. It's all sort of been a perfect storm, if you like, with Celtic getting off to a slow start, the likes of Hibs, Aberdeen maybe not starting as fast as they did last year. Even Rangers have improved, but they've dropped a few points, and it's all just come together nicely for Hearts. Hearts look capable. They've got this depth of squad where they could really push into the sort of new year, if you like, and who knows, if they're up there in March, who knows what could happen.
What amazes me is the amount of knocks Hearts have actually had this season. So you take...
Knocks mean like digs from people.
No. I think, you know, things that maybe some teams would probably struggle. So you've got your manager who gets hospitalised.
Yes,
you
difficult.
Know, you're waiting for a reaction off of that. You lose your top goal scorer from last season, Kyle Lafferty, to one of your rivals. And then on top of that, you lose your captain, Christoph Berra. I mean, this is a really fantastic story for Hearts.
Yeah, and signing 18 players is insane business. Mm-hmm. Trying to turn a team out of that, trying to get a squad together, united, out 18 players they've signed. I mean, I don't think I can think of another club that's done that and had any success.
Yeah, I mean,
ever.
I'm not really buying this whole comparison to 2005-06 when
George Burley was here. It's a name only.
It's not the same. Yeah.
It's a nonsense. I mean, there's a long way to go, and I know Hearts fans are well aware of that, and they should just enjoy this moment as well. And who knows? Who actually knows? How class would that be?
Hey, they look genuinely. they're good. Mm-hmm. They have good players, and especially the way they create chances is solid. They do create chances. They look good defensively. John Suter has just stepped up another level. Now yep. he looks, I mean, he's more than taken on Christoph Behrens.
I mean, how good was he for Scotland, Laura, for instance?
Oh yeah, he was magnificent. And it's nice to actually see you've got like a proper defender now that we can turn to. And yeah. with Behrens being out as well, with him getting written off out of the Nations League campaign, mm-hmm. it's so nice to be able to turn to mm-hmm. John Suter.
But Hearts have that back, but that spine that everyone loves. You know, you've got John Suter, and then you've got this really interesting story of Peter Haring coming in from nowhere and being a really, you know, signed as a centre-half yeah. and now being used as a centre-mid or attacking mid. And then you've got the likes of Ikpeazu and Stephen Naismith to just be that kind of creative midfielder for everything. For
Mitchell was good in the weekend as well. Yeah.
See if this is when they're going through a problem. They've got problems getting thrown at them. They're still not an established side based on the signings they've got in this season.
Exactly, it's not settled yet even.
If this is their difficult phase, what are they going to be like when things actually settle down for them? So in that sense, I don't think we can write them off. And it's a sort of typical Scottish mentality where you just go, yeah, sure, they're going to challenge. But why not? If they're doing well, just go with the flow. Nobody wins a league in October, so let's just enjoy this. Enjoy having a team doing well that's a wee bit different from normal, and just see where it takes us.
Well, you work for Motherwell. Did you enjoy the other day?
I use the term work loosely. I help them out at weekends whenever I'm back home.
Yeah.
Do some filming for them on match days. And yeah, from that perspective, Saturday wasn't wasn't the most ideal for them. But I mean, I'm there purely just to film for my own benefit and for theirs. I get a bit of experience out of it. They mm-hmm. get to make the most of having an alternative angle, which they can put out in a new highlights feature they do called Story of the Match. So that's good. And it also means I get to see a bit more Scottish football when I go home every so often. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot more Motherwell than anyone else.
Well, what's the mood like then at Motherwell at the moment? You know, it's not been a barnstorming start. There was obviously that good result against Rangers. A cracking game that was. But elsewhere, you know, what's the feeling?
No, I mean, obviously I'm only in on the odd match day, so I'm not there Monday to Friday to see what the players are like and the spirit behind the scenes. But from what I hear and the sense I get, it's all very much upbeat. Everyone's still playing very much as a unit. They're very hardworking boys mm-hmm. at that club. And yeah, there's a spirit throughout the whole squad. You see that from what the media team put out right through to when you're in amongst behind the scenes. You do see that. And yeah, okay, so they lost to Hearts at the weekend, but there's no shame in losing to league leaders. And yeah, you're saying the Rangers game, the atmosphere was great. I was up for that one.
Yeah, it was great
and
watch.
The mood around the place, everyone was just absolutely buzzing. And I know it's a total cliche to see that, but it was like there was an electric atmosphere afterwards. And it's nice to just see the teams taking points off the bigger sides when they're not expecting it, last minute drama and stuff. So yeah, all around the club, there's still a really good atmosphere, even if the points aren't quite on the board yet.
Mm-hmm. They played at times some really nice football as well. They're kind of hot and cold from what I've seen this season. I don't know how you thought the Hearts game went, but it was tight, right? Because there's only one goal in it, and which came from a sort of contentious issue. What do you think as a slightly Motherwell-sided person of the Ikpeazu versus Motherwell goalkeeper incident?
Well, I mean, you look at it, it's on first sighting, it's a 50-50. Everyone has admitted, even the Motherwell managers came out and admitted that. It's only when you see it on a replay, yes, it's a foul. It's also unfortunate.
Right, in slow motion.
When you see it in great detail, you see what's happened. But it's one of these incidents that you can't blame the referee for this one. It's on first viewing, it is so genuine to say, no, that's not a foul. So, no, it's one of these unfortunate instances that has then led to what happened to be the winning goal.
Also, the goalie is probably trying to boot his... Like, the keeper's taking no prisoners. He's going straight through with a punt goal kick, and Ikpeazu's gone in. I think you're right.
To be fair, I think, was it Levine said that he had a wee pop saying, well, Motherwell should be more annoyed at their keeper?
Yes.
I don't think that's actually fair. I think, in anything, the keeper didn't do anything wrong in that sense. It's Carl McHugh should be criticised for the pass back.
Oh, of course, yeah.
He put his goalkeeper under pressure when it was completely unnecessary. So the whole kind of series of events has just been very unfortunate from Motherwell's perspective. So hopefully Carson's not out for too long and it doesn't have long-lasting effects.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Hibs 3, Kilmarnock 2, the most entertaining game of the weekend. Neil Lennon's Hibs upholding their reputation as the entertainers. I said that. That was me. Some wonderful goals in the game, and what a free kick from Stevie Mallon.
He hit it rather well, didn't he?
He just does it all the time.
Hooked it top corner.
Yeah.
This game is ace to watch, by the way.
Oh, so good. So good.
Again, Hibs is very good going forward. I like that Killie stuck with the two up front, Brophy and
Stewart.
Stewart, who suddenly is exactly the kind of player that Derek McInnes must have thought he'd signed on loan when he got him. Phenomenal finish, that left-footed shot, top corner. What a pinger.
First touch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was amazing.
Well, it seems
I love a first touch. Yeah.
They're trying to outdo themselves, aren't they? Or each other, sorry.
That's what it's always like when Hibs are playing, and it feels great because it feels like they leak at either end, they score at it, and it's how many goals are we going to get here? This is a team I want to watch because I know I'm going to get to see a lot of action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like watching Hibs. If they're on, I want to watch them.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah. The goals, the calibre of the goals were just fantastic. David Gray's header.
Yeah. It's a set piece.
Oh, come on, though, but you've got to fit the finish.
It well.
I
the
like a good header as well.
I'm talking about the finish. Well. David Gray. Sail away with me, honey. He was out with injury for a wee while, wasn't he?
Yeah, I like David Gray. Bullet header. The Wolf, a.k.a. Eamon Brophy. And we know why he's called the Wolf now.
We do know.
Thanks. If you don't know why he's called the Wolf, you can rewind to our last episode where I revealed that.
Yep. I still love it.
And he scored. Also, again... I mean, the game was great. Killie did really well to stay in it. They played, they were good in the first half. They were poor in the second half. Stephen Clark, spelt PH, by the way, came out and said pretty much himself. And then referenced, of course, more refereeing shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
The refereeing is substandard. It's unacceptable.
Misery.
Personally. It's actually unacceptable, do you know, and it ruins the game. And so we're referencing these two things at the end. Hibs get their penalty. I can see where that's a penalty.
Yes.
Kirk Broadfoot slides in and then he kicks a leg, goes down under the challenge, and it's a penalty, says the referee. However, you watch it back with VAR, it's not a penalty.
Yeah, yeah. It's another one of those where you can excuse the referee a little bit, or you can at least sympathise with the referee because in real time, it's really difficult.
And
to
do you know what? 20 years ago, before they had iPads, or 40 years ago, before they had TVs, or any sort of way where you could rewind and watch instance in real time quickly to get that decision right, you could say, well, that's fine. No, it's a refereeing mistake. And it might balance out, but it's not acceptable. And then at the other end, right?
Mm-hmm. Go on.
That's a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So Ambrose goes in at, like, face height. Takes the guy's leg, Broadfoot again, who goes down. I don't know why Broadfoot's clutching his face.
Yeah, that's the
thing. Yeah, Broadfoot makes a meal of both. And it's almost as if the ref went, oh, not you again. You're not getting it.
But then the referee's not going to the actual incident,
exactly.
Is he?
Exactly. So the first one where he gives away the penalty, which wasn't a penalty, but then he goes, oh, crap, right, I'm going to fall over here and make it look as though it's equal and we've both been fouled. So he falls over and you're like, why are you falling over?
But that's
then that's
for the fan and supporter to say. If you're the referee, you go, he's still contact, it's still a foul. You can't get taken away by the guy holding his face. Sure enough, it's the move of a neep holding your face and your hands going down howling. And I don't know whether he's already predicting that the outcome's not going to go his way. Mm-hmm. So he's going down. And yes, it's dramatic. But the thing I keep seeing with referees in Scotland is they're giving what they predict the outcome of that should be rather than what it actually is. It looks like it's not a foul because he's gone down holding his face, but it is clearly a foul and a penalty.
Rangers got back to winning ways as they bounced back from Derby defeat with a 4-0 win over Dundee. More on Rangers in a moment, but as for Dundee, oh man. Grant Hill from Nutmeg Magazine joins us now. Grant, you're a Dundee fan. Neil McCann, the manager, going back to Ibrox. It's 5 defeats out of 5. The bottom of the table. You know, judging what you've been saying on Twitter, you're struggling for reasons to stick with McCann, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually 6 defeats in a bounce when you consider the Ayr United win in the League Cup as well.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's pretty grim, to say the least. I think there's a lot of people are actually surprised McCann's still in a job now, given the fact that Livingston and Sittenham have already moved. I think there's often a bit of reluctance from directors. They don't want to be the first sacking club of the season. But given how bad the start of the season's been and the fact that pressure's almost has been taken off a bit, I think there is a bit of surprise that he's still in the job.
So Dundee are at home to Hibs next Saturday, which is probably a huge game for McCann. But will he still be in charge for that game, do you reckon?
I think when it's not happened by Monday, I think he will be.
Well, I mean, St Mirren fired Stubbs two weeks ago, wasn't it, on the Monday, just late on. What do you think it is that McCann's failing at just now? Do you think, I mean, is it defensive solidity? Is it not being able to create chances? The players he's brought in? What's not happening for him?
Well, I mean, we finished last season with ninth, which is a place above where we'd finished the year before, and we'd got a round further in each cup. So you could come to the end of the season, yeah, he deserves a chance to take it on to see if that progress has continued. But what he's not done is really addressed the problems that were there for everyone to see last year, which is that the biggest problem is we can't put the ball in the net, and that's just made 10 times worse by our defending, which is just when we had Jack Henry, it was okay. He left, we brought in Stephen Cocker, and he was a huge part of us staying up last year. We've lost him now as well, and we're really struggling back there. I think the thing that, if you speak to 90% of Dundee fans, what annoys them about McCann is his absolute insistence, his dogmatism about playing out from the back when we clearly don't have the players to do it. When you saw what happened to Scotland last week when they were trying to do it against Belgium, that's often what happens with Dundee. It gets the fans restless. The players aren't comfortable playing that way, as one of our ex-players said in a recent newspaper interview. It just starts off a lot of the problems from there. I think he could help himself a lot if he just became a bit more pragmatic about these things.
Grant, before you go, just want to talk about a story that you wrote that people might have read over the weekend from Nutmeg. Yeah,
it's a really good story.
About the Dundee fan who skipped his own stag do to play for the club. Can you just give us a breakdown of that story? It was really interesting.
Yeah, basically, Craig Robertson, who's a guy I've known for a lot of years, is a Dundee fanatic. He was also a really talented junior player, played for Lochie United for years when they were winning the East Super League and getting to the Scottish Cup final, things like that. When we were in administration the second time, because being Dundee, you've always got to make it clear which period you're referring to, he had his testimonial against the club and gave up all the money for it to help the fighting fund. And as a result of that game, he kind of came to the attention of Barry Smith. And because we were so desperate for numbers that year, we were exploiting loopholes that allowed you to play trialists for up to three games. So Craig was just sitting in his office one day. He's an accountant, and he got a call from his manager, Paul Ritchie, who just basically said to him, you're going to be playing for Dundee tomorrow night if you want it. And he played the three games, and it's just a fantastic story. And
that's amazing.
Craig's such a nice, humble guy as well. Nobody deserved it more than him.
Grant, if you get a call from Neil McCann tonight asking you to go up front for Dundee, are you taking it?
I think if he's heard what I said earlier on, it's probably unlikely.
Dundee were mince, we know that, but I think we suspected Rangers should have won by the scoreline that they did.
I mean, Gerrard was saying that he wants them to be more, not clinical, but more ruthless and get that killer instinct, which they need if they're going to go to the next level. I think he's dead right. They sort of let it off a bit. There was another huge refereeing decision. Not huge, well, in context of it, because they won 4-0. Mm-hmm. But Morelos' goal was clearly onside.
Yeah.
The linesman's wrong again.
Yeah.
I'm getting really wound up with the referees. I think we'll cover this even a bit more soon. But clearly onside. So it's a goal.
Yeah, it should have.
Well done, refs. You've done it again.
I know.
There was a bit... There's a bit of defending, but I think it was for Rangers' fourth.
Oh, yes, it's class.
Yeah. So Kasunga's on as a substitute, and he's defending the near post from across. But he tries to control it with his chest while he's fallen over.
Yeah, it's
and
like
he passes it to him.
It's like a seal. He's trying to move forward. He just needs to put his laces through it.
It's the stupidest bit of defending I've ever seen since the last Dundee game. When there were similar things going on. It's just people being in the wrong positions and falling over and... Mm. No one knows. It's like they've gone to the circus and gone like, guys, you've got a game on Saturday.
Well, I think that reflects on what Grant was saying earlier, just defensively.
They don't look inspired.
Nonsense.
In my notes, I've written down the Dundee keeper is absolutely useless. That's all I've got for him. I also think... So Dundee have appealed this red card for Kenny Miller. I mean, do we all agree it's definitely a red, right?
It's 100% a red card.
Kenny Miller's quite devoted to keeping up with the banter years, isn't he? It's been quite a staunch effort for him so far. His season has been incredible. We're only a few weeks into it and he is providing all the entertainment.
He's already been fired and sent off.
Yeah, I know. He's been a manager, player, sacked as a manager, player, now a player, and they're getting red cards.
Well, I mean, what must we can do? And so he signs a striker to try and help him get these goals. And what's he thinking? And he's going, he's sent off now, and now he's out this.
I don't know why they have appealed it, because there is no way that that is going to be repealed. Unless the SFA's panel decide, oh, we've got so much flack right now, we better just let one go.
Right place at the right time.
I mean, the rumour, of course, is that, oh, Kenny Miller, ex-manager, has come in to, you know, take on Dundee. Ticking time clock for a time clock? What the hell's that? He's coming in for Dundee to like the sword of Damocles above McCann's head.
Nice.
I know. Nice. I know that one. And there's a next international break is in a month, is it?
What's the thing? There's three games, I think, left before the next international break.
So they could well be...
If you look at the fixtures as well for Dundee, I would actually argue they've had an easier start to the season in terms of fixtures than they have coming up now until the next break. So they started off with St Mirren in the first game. Now, they should be beating the newly promoted side when it's a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. They've went on, they played St Johnson, they played Motherwell, and, okay, on hindsight, Aberdeen with the form they're on just now. These are all winnable games on paper. Mm-hmm. But now they're going to take on Hibs.
Yeah.
They've got Accies, which is going to be down that end of the table.
Mm-hmm. I think that's his last already. Chance.
And then Killie as well. Hibs and Killie are two huge games that they probably will not win.
I can't see him get any points out of that. I totally agree. And then, because it means Dundee must be shopping around a little bit, thinking what they've got. They've got Miller in a big contract. It's a couple of years he's got, I think. I mean, he's old.
2 years.
Yeah, I don't even mean to him, but, you know, as a player. So, I wonder.
Well, let's. I mean, we've absolutely picked Dundee to pieces.
Just like Rangers.
Hey! We shouldn't forget that Rangers are in European action on Thursday. They've got Villarreal in the Europa League on Thursday. They've got Santi Cazorla come up against them. Carlos Bacca. Oh, the lads. It's going to be a tough one for them, isn't it?
But even you know, before you even go into, oh, is it going to be a tough one? What's the result going to be? Just to be there for them this season is so huge. Yeah, okay, so it's a difficult start to the season so far, but it's quite incredible when you think, okay, they're dropping points, but on the other hand, the spirits are so high, the fans are so happy right now. You would be fooled, if you talk to Rangers fans right now, you'd be fooled into thinking they're top of the league, because everything is quite rosy with Steven Gerrard coming in. They're in Europe again. Everyone's quite content.
It's calm. It's stable.
What's going on? We're not used to this.
Yeah, I know.
I think you guys need to calm down.
All right.
Listen, ultimately, I don't think Villarreal are having a very good time at the moment. I'm not 100% certain.
They won at the weekend, but that was our first one since, I think, the start of the season.
I think it would have been better for Rangers to have their first game in Europe at home. I think that's going to be really tough.
Gap in talent, I think.
Oh, man.
I mean, Spanish teams, I mean, it's very cliche, but they all can pass that ball and move, and positioning's all just very difficult to deal with. I've been really impressed with how Rangers have adapted to European football this season. Looked very organised, shape's been good. So, things that Gerrard has been saying, you know, they defended well and they've taken their time to attack, and they're good in transition. A bit of speed there to go with it. I think Villarreal will just be a step above. I remember when Aberdeen were in Europa, I mean, it's not the same team because Rangers are a better team, but when Aberdeen were playing in the qualifiers and they played Real Sociedad a few years ago, they were just a class above, just couldn't get near, do you know, and it's just that difference in quality will really tell. But if they can get a 0-0 out of it, that's great. A 1-0 loss, 2-0, it's fine.
You cannot judge Rangers on Thursday in Europe. Like you said earlier, blank canvas.
I think it'll be very much the way they approach the Celtic game. There'll be a low block, keep it tight, just try and stay in the game and grab something in the last 10 minutes.
Looking for Gallagher at the back post. It's bouncing kindly for Stephen Wallace! It's stunning! It's brilliant from Stephen Wallace!
It was a pretty dreadful day to be Kenny Miller. After the full-time whistle blew at Ibrox, he was contemplating a defeat and a red card against his old club. He probably then got his phone out and saw that Livingston had secured their third win in three Premiership games since ditching him as their manager. Livingston 1, Hamilton 0, and maintaining their 100% record under Gary Holt, guys.
What a result for Gary Holt.
Fantastic.
Also, in my notes, I've just written, what a swear word hit. That's that lawless
goal
on his left foot.
So good.
The technique is phenomenal.
Do you know what? You can show me all the good free kicks that we got this weekend, but nothing compares to a hit like Stephen Lawless.
It was awesome,
first
wasn't
touch.
It?
Yeah. They don't come close to something like that.
It's one when you hit it, almost like a golf swing, it doesn't hurt you. Sweet.
It stays hit.
Yeah,
you know, as soon as you
if anything, Clive, he's hit it too well.
Yes.
It's lovely though. Again, another solid performance by Livy against what probably would have been a relegation rival at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. We're still at the start of the season, but Livy are third and good for it.
Was this
right?
Their best start to a season, a Premiership top-flight season since the year they finished third?
Well, it's been 17 years since they won three in a row at this level.
So yeah, they've not started as well in the top flight since the year they finished third. And with that squad, it was such a cosmopolitan group of guys they had together. They were throwing money at it, whereas this year it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a whole
mm-hmm.
Scottish side there. And then you just think, well, what's possible?
Well, they are structurally really well put together. I think that's something that Livingston have always kind of had. They've just not had any confidence in their shape.
It was last season they were playing that same shape. It was a 3-5, you know, it's essentially a 5 at the back at times, which is in a 3 in attacking phases. But yeah, Holtz let them do what they were doing well last season, which is what Miller was not doing when he's in charge. Mm-hmm. And they've got a real bite and drive in midfield to win second balls. They're playing nice passing football for a lot of the time, but they revert to direct passing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's expected of a team who's just come up, trying to win the second balls.
It's not looking great for Hamilton, though, is it?
I think they're okay. Like we said, I mean, they're going to be all right. Canning's got a...
But I mean, but if you compare that to Dundee, you know, okay, Hamilton have lost 4 out of their last 5. Dundee have lost 5 out of the 5. There's not that much difference.
Hamilton's had a tough run, though, haven't they? I'm trying to think who they played.
This feels like a conversation we have all the time. It's Hamilton, oh, they're not doing very well, are they? Are they going to be struggling this season? But they'll be okay.
They'll
survive, it's fine. Nothing's changed.
I know, they're just there.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to pick something
it's
out
like
really good about Hamilton.
It's like you go to someone's house, right? That someone's always got a butternut squash there. You're like, why do you have that? I don't know, I bought it one day and it's just there. And it's always in your house. No one ever knows what to do with it. I mean, I do now.
It's time to look around the grounds now. It's our man Craig Anderson with the headlines from the Championship, League One and Two.
Inverness Caledonian Thistle are top of the Championship after a week's break from the bread and butter affair of league football as they claimed the points in a 3-2 battle against Partick Thistle. Jordan White, Sean Rooney and Sean Welsh from the penalty spot had John Robertson's side 3-up and easy by half-time, despite Miles Storey seeing his spot kick saved by home goalie Mark Ridgers. Alan Archibald saw his side get a couple back in the final stages as Blair Spittle netted with 8 minutes to go and Chris Doolan closing the gap to 1 in injury time, but it wasn't enough as time ran out. The only other team to claim a victory in the Championship on Saturday was Ayr United, who came from 2-0 down to claim a good win at home over bottom of the table Falkirk. Ray McKinnon's side were 2-up by the break through Zach Rudden and Dumantis Petrovicius, and the Bairns, with no league points prior to this one, were hoping this was their day. Sadly not, as the Honest Men hit back through Lauren Shanklin with his 13th of the season and Addy Geggin to equalise, but a bizarre own goal swung at Ayr's way as a corner kick scramble saw the ball come off the back of Falkirk keeper Leo Fazan as he lay on the ground and it trundled into the net, securing a 3-2 win for Ayr United. Proof that when you're in Falkirk's position, football really does have a strange way of kicking you when you're down. So with no Stephen Dobie goals for Queen of the South to report on, we move straight into League One, where Bobby Lynn's hat-trick saw Arbroath claim a 3-1 home win over Forfar Athletic. Lynn's first was cancelled out by Ross Cunningham in the stroke of half-time, but two more from the Gable Endies hitman claimed the win as Dick Campbell's men moved 2 points ahead of Raith Rovers, who drew 1-1 at Brechin. Rory Curry's winner 2 minutes from time saw East Fife take a 2-1 win over Airdrieonians as they improved their league standing. Cammy Russell's opening goal for the Diamonds on 74 minutes gave them the edge, but the Fifers hit back almost immediately through Liam Watt before Curry saved his heroics for the end. Edinburgh City remained top of League 2 as they picked up their latest win in a 2-1 success over Annan Athletic at Ainslie Park. Blair Henderson was on target twice to give themselves a chance of claiming a fifth league win out of 6, and although Ryan Cinnamon struck with 7 minutes to go, City held on for the points again. And it was also a great weekend for Elgin City fans, who made the 239-mile trip to Berwick Rangers and came away with a 3-0 win that takes them to fifth in the table. A Jordan Oru own goal and two from Greg Morrison made it a great day for the City fans as they celebrated their third win in their previous 4 against the Wee Gers.
Jonathan Johansson was seconds away from a victory in his first match in charge of Greenock Morton, but his hopes were dashed by Dundee United and a last-minute equaliser at Tannadice in the Championship. The last few weeks have been turmoil for the Tun, and Adam Thomas from the Greenock Telegraph joins us now. Adam, Ray McKinnon was appointed manager in the summer. Morton took 7 points from a possible 9 at the start of the season, and everything was rosy. What's happened now?
Well, it was. As you said, it was all going well. They'd beaten Ross County just on the Saturday prior. Things were looking good, and in the space of a week, it's just got thrown into turmoil. Bit of a crazy day that Friday. He's taking training as normal with everyone else at Park Lee. Finishes about 1 o'clock, and then sort of about 3 o'clock, the story sort of breaks that he's off to Falkirk. Can't say I saw it happening. Don't think any of the players or the staff thought it was happening either. It's just a confusion. It was really confusing at the time, but as they say, it's how football works sometimes.
Is it true that the chairman, Crawford Ray, is actually considering legal action? He said that McKinnon left prematurely, but is he actually going to take out legal action on him?
Yeah, well, the thing is, while they gave permission for Ray to speak to Falkirk, that is it, basically. They said, we're looking for a six-figure sum if you do want to take him off our hands. And as far as I'm aware, I don't think they've received any money, and they rejected their resignations as well. So signing for Falkirk is a breach of contract. So I'm not the biggest on the legal matters, but I think that's sort of ongoing. Sometimes when managers leave and things, they say, they go call the team in and say, oh, look, we're doing this, or we're about to get sacked or something like that. Then there's quite a few players still haven't heard from him at all. So
Why do you think he left? Is it money, ambition? Is there more to do at Falkirk? What's the pull?
He's from Dundee. He was staying in Glasgow while he was down there, so I don't know whether being at Falkirk is a shorter commute. Don't know whether things have happened behind the scenes at all. Yeah, I think Ray is the only one that's sort of able to answer that one properly.
So is this why the Greenock Telegraph, in response to this whole debacle, put a picture of Ray McKinnon as Judas on the back page? Can you just explain the decision for that, and what were people's reaction in Greenock?
Well, first of all, I think the biggest thing to take into account is just the way that sort of the events unfolded and the manner of, with everything that happened. Nobody had a clue this was happening, and I think quite a lot of people felt that he'd gone behind everyone's backs to do this. For all intents and purposes, Morton are sort of on a high from last season and have started the season really well under him, brought back old players from the club and things that used to play, like Chris Miller, Jim McAllister. So for someone to sort of jump ship so quickly, we captured sort of the fans' feeling with that back page. I think a lot of fans were upset at the time and still are at the manner of his departure, and for a club that doesn't seem to have too much more than Morton in terms of resources and things. Like, they don't have an academy structure. The Forth Valley Academy got disbanded last season. That's something else that Morton would have over them. But it was just bizarre and not met with much positivity from Greenock fans at all.
What about the new man, Jonathan Johansson? So he was Morton reserve manager 6 years ago and an assistant to Rangers last season. What do you make of him being there? Are the fans happy with him?
Yeah, I think they're quite happy seeing it as a forward-thinking appointment. It's one where he's got a lot of experience, but I think, again, you have to be patient with him because it is his first managerial job. He's been an assistant for Rangers and for Finland and been a manager of the under-20s for Motherwell. So there's quite a lot of, I'd say, cautious optimism, I guess, that... And he has all the sort of ingredients to do well. Whether he does well remains to be seen, but he set up his team pretty well on the Saturday. They look very well organised for a team that he's only had 5 days under him. He still hasn't got an assistant or coaching staff yet, and I'm sure it's only upwards from there.
If this story keeps going on, and maybe the next time Ray McKinnon comes back to Greenock Morton, we can have you back on.
Definitely. Thank you. Well, I'd actually like to add, we're considering doing Judas masks for the game against Falkirk on October 20th.
Send us some. Post some down.
We'll get a couple for you, don't worry. That goes ahead.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
It's Niall McGinn going for it. That is an absolute beauty. Quite a way to open your account for the season. And a deserved equaliser for Aberdeen.
St Johnstone 1, Aberdeen 1. A stunning free kick from Niall McGinn, securing a point for the Dons, but just one win in five for Aberdeen in the league this season. The only team they've beaten is Dundee, JJ.
Yes, I have concerns over how Aberdeen are playing this season.
Go on.
Whereas in the last couple of seasons, I've suspected that chance creation isn't really fantastic. They're not making a huge amount of goals. They're just scoring round probably just about over what their XG would be. I need to look at this. I've not seen it. But I always wondered whether they're performing a little bit above what they actually should be. And I think they're down maybe at the level that they are at now. I know that I'm really clutching at language today. But they didn't really create an awful lot. They had more of the ball, but mostly they didn't create enough. The goal was a free kick. The goal St Johnstone scored. Yeah. This is the thing. So there's so many things that are frustrating about watching Aberdeen play. They marked that corner, they were man marking for it.
Yeah.
And normally it's a bit of a mix, so that, you know, zonal and man marking. But if they had that zonal or even a mix, there'd be a man on the corner of the 6 yard box who'd have headed that, the first ball.
Yeah.
Head it away.
Yeah.
Gone. Instead, Shea Logan gets beaten to it.
Yeah, and it was McMillan, wasn't it?
Yes.
Just kind of a.
Puts a header in the near post.
Yeah, yeah.
That is, you always have a man in that 6 yard box. Why is it not there? The goal goes in, game changes. Johnstone can sit back and then Aberdeen have to take the game to them. They don't have the players to quicken up and create. There's no 10. There's no players who can really open up a defence like that. The reason that Aberdeen did not win that, nor did St Johnstone not deserve their point, wasn't the referee. And I don't want to go into refereeing again. But have you seen the incident at the end of the game between Aberdeen and Kilmarnock?
Yeah, Gary McKay-Steven. It's a penalty right at the end of the game. He gets clipped and it's inside the box. I mean, I know it's close, but it's inside that. We're going down that hole again of, right, well, could have changed the game, it's a refereeing decision, but yeah, we can't ignore it.
Do you know the thing as well, right? So I don't think there's a single person watching that game in the stadium or on the pitch who doesn't think that's a penalty. So GMS cuts in from the right wing on his left foot, he's driving. When he does that, he's fast. A single touch will take him down.
A few times.
And the guy goes in from behind, he trips him. It's a clear penalty. You cannot get a more clear penalty. Colin is standing 5 yards away. He can see it. What is he seeing? What's playing? It's like itchy and scratchy cartoons going in his head. He can see it in front of him and he's going, no, it's no.
Well, what?
Is he thinking too long? Is he taking too long to think about it? Because it has wound me up so much.
For the reputation where players, you know, like Gary McKay-Steven, who's so light on his feet, so quick as well, that he thinks, oh, you're going down too easily there. I don't know if that's an aspect of it.
You know, you're running at pace, right? And then you get clipped. You go down, yeah. Right?
So I think maybe because he's an agile player as well. Maybe he goes down and he thinks, oh, you're kind of over-egging that. But he's not a player that does that very often.
I mean, do you think that's a foul, right? If you're running fast and someone clips you and takes you down, it's a foul, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good, yeah.
So Aberdeen...
What possible way is it not a penalty?
I don't know.
And I think the point's probably fair, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's a penalty, and that would have saved it. And if Eamon Brophy hadn't thrown himself to the ground and pulled Devlin, it would have been a red card, and the result against Kilmarnock could have been different. So many things. That's two massive decisions that could well affect. Because Aberdeen are now sitting well off it. They're in the bottom half.
Yeah, I know.
The bubble's burst.
Yeah.
What about St Johnstone? They do have a potency now that will cause team problems.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Tony Watt does
in
the long term. I think maybe he's found his level now. Almost. Mm-hmm. There's been a few years of struggling here, there, abroad, up and down, south of the border, etc. But no, I think he's kind of got off the mark quite early on. He's found it in his strides. And St Johnstone, I mean, it's almost a team that we say, oh yeah, you know, they're punching above their weight. It's the same old story with them. But this season, yeah, they look kind of back to it again. And yeah, they're around the kind of midway point just now. But let's see how long that kind of goes. To be honest, they could end up being around mid-table all season, which I don't think would surprise too many people.
St Mirren 0, Celtic 0. Oliver Ncham, the hero against Rangers, was the villain on Friday night. Two yellow cards in the first half. I think we can all agree that was probably a deserved sending off.
Yeah, the only controversy I've seen of it is slow motion replays showing that when he dives into the second tackle, which is on the touchline, with the guy trying to clear it, he's trying to block the ball, so you can see why he's doing it, but he's going in fast and it looks kind of, not aggressive, but he's put a lot of momentum into it and he catches his heel.
Yep.
that's kind of it. But I think it's a second yellow.
I think what went against Ncham was he was putting in a lot of tackles in the game. You know what? He wasn't hiding from the game, that's for sure. I don't think that handball was a deliberate handball. I think the movement of his body, I don't think he deliberately went to try and deviate the change of the ball. But he was constantly in the referee's mind. And that was, I think, as much as there's no contact, it's a dangerous tackle.
There was a tiny bit of contact.
And I would also, but I understand, I'm trying to play both sides. There was the tackle from Ayer on, I can't remember the St Mirren player, very similar to Oliver and Cham's second yellow.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no card.
Not even a free kick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we should really kind of hail the performance of St Mirren. And you've got to give credit to Oran Kearney. That was his first game in charge for St Mirren. But he's also, you know, the club's seventh permanent manager in 4 years. So
huge difference in the way they were playing.
Yeah.
They were very organised. They played football. They passed it. They attacked well. They were good in transition. Mm-hmm. Celtic were giving the ball away a lot, is one thing. So they were sitting back deep. The striker was playing in midfield, a bit like a 4-6-0, like a Levine Scotland kind of formation.
Mm-hmm.
But when they broke quickly, and they had designated players who were going, and they were making chances.
Now, I would say, I want to put it down to the Irish magician that Oran Kearney brought in. A guy called Rod Hogg, and he performed to the squad. In an effort to boost votes. I remember when Ronnie Dyla came into Scottish football and everyone was laughing because when he was in Norway, he said if they'd won the league, he would strip and run around the stadium half naked. Stuff like that. It's morale boosting.
Good for like a new team that's, you know, the management's coming in, it's changed. They're still getting to know each other. They're mm-hmm. trying to build that team spirit for going into a new league as well this season. I think it's great for morale.
Mm-hmm.
You get that sense of humour between everyone. You get everyone becomes closer off the pitch. It's only going to help. It's and not going to do anything wrong.
Do you know what Rod Hogg, the magician's first trick was?
Oh, God.
To make Alan Stubbs' managerial career disappear. This is another thing I heard about him, though. Rod Hogg, he had a brother who didn't make it in football.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his name was Ball.
Antoine Ferdinand.
That's a solid joke.
Antoine Ferdinand signed for St Mirren. That's good.
You?
That's good. That's interesting.
Yeah, do you know somebody like Antoine Ferdinand will like that? He was all right, Anton Ferdinand. I liked that they kept it secret till the end. Good signing.
I guess, yeah, it's one of those.
I think.
Well,
it's one of those because you can't remember if he really is any good anymore.
It's just a competent defender signing for St Mirren. It's had a decent career behind him.
He's a player who's played he's a player who's played at a good level. He's went for a bit of money to a couple of different clubs, but I would just have a bit of reservation about it because I know Stephen Colker came up to Dundee. You know, some of these ex-Premier League players. Let's just wait and see.
Is he here to retire?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he has, you know, injury problems, and that's why maybe some clubs wouldn't want to bring him along. But hey, it's good. It's good for St Mirren.
Good, yeah. Celtic, by the way, that's 2 drop points, which is important. But they're going to be just fine. Don't worry, Celtic fans. You're okay.
Yeah, you think they'll come back? They'll win the title. Confident. Laura,
can I be the romantic one here and say no, Hearts are going to win it?
Oh yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
No, realistically, Celtic will. They'll get back on
What do you think? What do you think that how they're going to get in on Europe? So they play Rosenborg on Thursday. A team
they're strangers to.
Yeah, they beat them in the Champions League qualifiers this season. I think it will be more of the same, but I think up against Leipzig and Salzburg will be very difficult.
It feels almost like this campaign for them might actually be a bit of a hassle when things aren't kind of going the right way for them domestically.
Mm-hmm.
It's no secret that they want the Champions League over the Europa League, and it is a kind of damp squib to an extent when they get into that instead of the Champions League. And it's almost like, well, from an outside perspective, everyone else is like, yeah, great, we've got 2 Scottish teams in the Europa League, we're all enjoying it. But from a Celtic perspective, they might just be like, they want to just kind of sort out the domestic side.
Ten in a row is more important to Celtic fans than you know, a run in the Europa League.
Are they going
to
be good enough?
I think it will be difficult. I was looking at it, you know, Salzburg got to the semi-finals last season and Leipzig got to the quarter-finals last season. So it's not a cakewalk, that's for sure.
No. And Ncham will have to be better behaved if he is to take the point. He's their best player, I think, by far.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Monday after the top of the table clash between Hearts and Livingston. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker, and of course, the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.